south of the border.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines, or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites, where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, if you stick around a while, you'll find out. So, let's get started. She was a picture. Today, I want to skip around a bit on my topics, but I'm sure what I've got to say is going to be of interest to some of you out there. So here's a few little tidbits about Latin America that I bet you haven't heard talked about before. First, let's talk about foreigners who come down to Latin America to start businesses, because that's what most expats do. They come down here specifically, the majority anyway, to start businesses. Well, the rest of them just come down here thinking they're going to retire. Though rarely do they follow through with that plan. They usually end up doing some kind of business because they find it so easy compared to what it takes up in the first world. In fact, some expats I know say it's infinitely more easy to do it down here, even for those of us who are trying to do it on a shoestring budget. But let's talk about the other end of the spectrum. There are some expats that come down with loads of money. They hit the ground running, and before you know it, they're really big movers and shakers down here. And believe it or not, some of the people that come down here with big wads of money, ready to invest, are expats not from the first world at all, but from the third world. Third world expats from other parts of the world coming down to Latin America to invest. Now, let me give you an example of this. Once you're down in Latin America for a while, let's say you're 6 months in one particular city that you like. Well, after a bit of exploring and getting a feel for the business climate in the place, you'll get that after about 6 months, believe me. You'll discover there are certain sections of every Latin American city, big or small, where certain kinds of specialty businesses have located. And how so many of them end up in one place, I'll never know. But that's what you see in every medium to large-sized city down here. Take, for example, used car parts or mechanics. If you want to get tires or shocks or some transmission work done for your car, you just ask any guy on the street, and he'll give you a range of avenues and streets where you'll find storefront after storefront businesses who deal almost exclusively with that kind of stuff. Same thing goes if you're in the plumbing, the jewelry, or the baking business. You name it, wholesale or retail, there's always a certain section of town, usually in the oldest parts of the town, where you'll find all that kind of stuff concentrated in a few block area. And that goes for electrical and electronic supply stuff, too. Somehow, over the years, all the shops that supply a certain kind of industry, like even pneumatic tool equipment and air compressors, for example, well, they always seem to end up in one little particular section of town, which really makes it easy on us, the consumer. But like I said, these are in heavily populated, concentrated areas, old areas of town, which means those are also probably the more dangerous areas of town, too. So, if you're opening an upscale pizza parlor, let's say, and you're looking for parts for that Italian espresso machine, it's best to take someone along with you on the trip. Because personally, I don't like walking around some of the dangerous older parts of town alone. And though if you keep a low profile, you almost never get bothered. You know what they say, there's safety in numbers. And like I said, if you're looking for industrial or specialty parts, you traditionally find a lot of that stuff in an older, junkier, a little bit more dangerous section of town. By the way, these areas are usually quite dingy, dirty, and full of litter, too. And every now and then you might see a wino or two passed out in a doorway, just like downtown Cleveland. But if you're looking for the best deals, this is where you're going to find them. Sure, you'll be able to find a local hardware store in your neighborhood that'll sell you a paint sprayer and an air compressor, for example. But your local hardware guy is only going to have maybe one or two on hand and not much variety at all. But in those older, dirtier, kind of dilapidated sections of town, you'll have 20 or 30 different brands to pick from. And if you pull out some cash and make a lowball offer, you can always make a deal with these guys. And here's the funny thing. When you walk into one of these dingy little places, it always looks like no one's even dusted the shelves or cleaned the place for 30 years. And even the machines, for example, if you're looking at compressors, the floor models will be dingy too and loaded with dust, even though they're brand new and haven't been fired up once. But you see, this is where you want to go if you want to buy a specific brand of an item. Let's say you're fond of Milwaukee Tool and you want to buy a Milwaukee Tool circular saw or a router. Well, believe it or not, in every medium and big city in Latin America, you'll be able to find Milwaukee Tool, even though it's an odd brand. And a very expensive brand, too. All the big tool manufacturers, Stanley, Bosch, Ryobi, Black & Decker, Skill, you name it, they're down here, and they have all the parts and do service on those things down here too. They even have all the small gas engine brands like you see on lawnmowers and weed whackers, like Honda, Briggs & Stratton, Tecumseh, and 1001 no-name Chinese brands too. But the thing is, if you buy a product like that at one of these specialty stores, it seems like they almost never give you a year warranty like you get if you buy a product like that from Sears or Walmart. They give you 30, 60, or 90 days, which scares you off right away, and you're thinking, with such a short warranty, what kind of people are you dealing with? But that's the way it is and how it's always been down here. And even if you do have a warranty, they'll often find ways to get around it. But not Sears or Walmart or Office Depot or Ace Hardware or any of the first world franchises that came down here and opened chain stores. That's one of the great things about buying from Sears or Walmart or Office Depot. They stand by their guarantee just like they do up in the first world. That is, if you have the receipt. If you don't, you're SOL. Even though in places like Walmart, you're in the computer because you're a member and everything's backed up. You still have to have that receipt or you won't get warranty service. And these other mom-and-pop retail and wholesale guys in these areas of town I've been talking about, well, they'll stick by their 30, 60, and 90-day guarantees too, but almost anything will last that long as you don't drop it down a flight of stairs. Now, another thing you'll notice in medium to large Latin American cities, and when I talk about medium-sized Latin American cities, I would say those are cities with about 200,000 to a million people. My idea of a big Latin American city is anything over a million. Anyway, another thing you'll notice in medium to large sized cities is that there are obvious pockets of businesses owned by foreigners. And I mean expats, but not expats like you and me, running the usual expat-style tourist businesses like bed and breakfasts, bars and restaurants, and gelato shops and stuff. I'm talking about little pockets and enclaves of expats coming from third world countries like China or the Middle East, Indonesia, or India. For example, you'll see an awful lot of clothing stores in Latin America that are concentrated in certain little areas, like I talked about, that seem to be exclusively owned and operated by Orientals. Orientals, by the way, that don't speak much Spanish at all. Not to mention, there's an awful lot of retail clothing stores in concentrated areas in older sections of town, again, that are owned and operated by people from Middle Eastern descent. And they, too, don't speak very good Spanish at all. In fact, first world expats like me can barely understand them. And they don't speak English either, so you wonder how the hell they did it. And in fact, when you go into their stores, you often see the owner-operator at the cash register, obviously an Oriental or a Middle Eastern guy or gal, while all the helpers, attendants, and floor walkers in the store are local Latins. They're the ones that deal with the customers directly, not the Chinese or Middle Eastern owner with their bad Spanish. Now, given that situation, it always makes me wonder, and in fact, it makes every expat wonder, how in the hell these guys could come all the way over from China, or Vietnam, or Indonesia, or any other third world country a half a world away, land in Latin America, which has to be for them triple the culture shock that you and I will ever experience, obviously not knowing a word of Spanish or anything about the Spanish culture for that matter. Because if you're from India, Indonesia, China, or the Middle East, for example, not only have you probably never run into a single Latin American person in your whole life, because, well, Latin Americans just don't go to those countries. They go to the United States because they can sneak in, and to Europe because Spain gives them a no-hassle visa for 90 days. I mean, I've never heard in my whole life a single Latin American say, "Hey, you know what I want to do? I really want to move to China. Or I'm really thinking about immigrating to Egypt or Turkey." Now, Egypt, there's the land of opportunity. Yeah, right. Maybe in another universe, but not in this reality. Anyway, what I'm saying is expats coming from third world countries to Latin America, like China or the Middle East, for example. And by the way, Latin Americans call all people of Middle Eastern descent Arabs, which is Spanish for Arab. They lump them all into that category, whether you're from Egypt, Syria, Palestine, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, you're an Arabi. Just like we first worlders tend to label every Oriental as a Chinese. And while I'm mentioning that, here's something else that's politically incorrect. Homegrown Latin American guys and gals don't much like people of the Arab race. Mothers don't like their daughters going out with them, and Latin men don't like doing business or partnering up with them. Though, of course, they do all the time because business is all about money. But behind closed doors and at parties, you often do hear outspoken prejudice against a class of people they call Arabs. I've not only been told, but I've overheard a number of times Latin businessmen telling me that Arabs, as they call them, are sneaky businessmen and not to be trusted. And though there are more Middle Eastern people in Latin America than you might think, you almost never see them at regular Latin American parties and get-togethers. Your everyday Latin person doesn't have them as friends or acquaintances. And they're not looking to be friends with them either. And the same thing goes with Orientals, too. Though here's another part of the story I'm sure you've never heard. Down here in Latin America, the so-called Arabs are, of course, involved in all kinds of businesses, with the exception of farming and agriculture. That's one area they haven't penetrated at all yet. Maybe they just don't have any interest or aren't any good at it. Who knows? But the thing is, even though the average Latin American on the street admits that Middle Easterners are very good businessmen, Latin Americans never, ever seem to be concerned, the way first world people are in the United States and Europe, about that dark side of the so-called Arabic culture, you know, the terrorist and fundamentalist connection that the first world has been so uptight about for the last 10 or 15 years, especially since 9/11. And that seems rather odd to me and a lot of other first world expats. A lot of us wonder in the back of our minds, when we run into Middle Easterners on the street or in business, specifically the ones that aren't westernized, that are still culturally and religiously connected to their homeland, and that's obvious by the way they dress and talk and follow the Quran and all that. But you see, down here in Latin America, you just don't hear Latin Americans ever talking about Arabs as if they were undesirables or terrorists or even connected to anything that might be subversive in any way. Latins have their own kind of prejudices against them. They might not want to do business with them or want their sons or daughters to date or marry them, but they don't think of them at all as troublemakers or members of cells or terrorist organizations. There's none of those negative stereotypes working against them down here. That kind of stuff doesn't even cross a Latin person's mind. Even though if you pay attention to the first world press and the media up there, there's a lot of talk of Middle Eastern terrorist cells being organized and operated down here in Latin America. Supposedly, they're just biding their time and waiting for the moment when they get that call to action from Al-Qaeda or whoever in the Middle East, and then they head over the U.S.-Mexican border and spring into action. I'm sure you've all heard versions of that story 10 or 20 times already, haven't you? But if you ask any Latin American, he or she will tell you that Arabs that is, are just very good capitalist businessmen who like to keep to themselves. And that's the same way Latins feel about people from India, the Chinese, the South Koreans, and any Orientals living in Latin America. But still, us expats wonder how they do it, how they get started when it's such a culture clash, and how they become successes so fast when they're not much liked or accepted by the locals, and the only time they ever get a chance to marry into a Latin family is when they have a position in money, because it's all about the money down here. Let me just put it like this. Middle Easterners, Chinese, and people from India do not, I repeat, do not have the gringo advantage. You talk to any Latin American female and she'll tell you that she would not like to have an Arabi or an Oriental boyfriend because she thinks those races are unattractive and too culturally different than a person from a Latin culture could ever get used to. But they sure do make it in business and sometimes they make it very big. For example, some years back, I had a syndicated English language morning radio show in Central America that was part of a huge chain of Latin American radio stations. In fact, it was part of 40 or 50 radio stations owned by one guy. And when I was first recruited to do that radio show, I had a meeting with the boss and the three principal directors of that chain of stations, who just happened to be the boss's three adult daughters, who were college educated at some of the finest first world private schools, because obviously their dad had the money to send them anywhere he wanted. Now the funny thing about this guy and his three daughters who owned all these radio stations was that they were 100% Korean. And when I went to that meeting, I had a nice long conversation in English with the owner's daughters who were running things, who spoke English well because they were quite educated. And of course, their father was at that meeting too, and he didn't say a word during that whole hour. He just smiled and nodded his head a lot. And later on, one of the daughters who was to become the program director, she told me her dad didn't say anything because he didn't speak English, and in fact, he didn't speak Spanish very well at all either. And here's a guy who owned 40 or 50 radio stations in Latin America, all broadcasting in Spanish except one, which was the one that I was on, the only English language radio station that he owned. And you gotta wonder, in fact, I still wonder, how did that guy do it? Coming from South Korea 30 or 40 years ago, not knowing a lick of Spanish, and creating this huge radio empire. And his daughter told me, after 30 or 40 years, his Spanish still sucks. So much so that he can't read a contract in Spanish, even though over the years he's had to sign hundreds of them. Instead, he has his wife, or one of his daughters, translate contracts into Korean for him. And that's something that to this day I'll never understand. But the other half of that story is this. Every day when I drive to work at that radio station, and it was in a big tower of about 30 stories with underground parking. Anyway, in that underground parking lot, there was an elevator that went directly up to the radio station's suite of offices. And right in front of that elevator were four reserved parking places for the management. One for the big boss, the Korean dad, and three other reserved parking places, each with a brand new Mercedes-Benz SUV in that space. And each one of these $60,000 SUVs belonged to the husbands of the daughters of the big boss, each of whom who'd been given plum management jobs once they'd married into the Korean family. And I found out after working at that station for a while that each one of these husbands was a lazy-ass, good-for-nothing, entitled Latin guy from well-placed, formerly wealthy Latin families that had fallen on hard economic times, and each one of these guys married into that Korean family not because they wanted to, not for love. No way. Like the song says, what's love got to do with it? Because like I said, Latins are just not attracted to Orientals, and they'll come right out and tell you so. But anyway, these sons of aristocrats who'd fallen on hard times married these girls strictly for the money. And the Korean daughters, I found out later, through radio station Scuttlebutt and the like, of course. Behind the scenes at radio stations, we have our own kind of soap operas, if you know what I mean. Anyway, these daughters of the Korean boss were instructed in no uncertain terms, through subtle hints by their rich mom and dad, of course, that they were supposed to keep their eye out for a Latin husband from a good, solid, well-placed family. Not necessarily rich, but from a Latin family with a good aristocratic name. Because obviously that would be good not only for the family, but for the business in the long run. So that's just what his daughters did. They each ended up with a well-placed Latin guy with a solid, well-placed, old-world Spanish legacy in the family. But in reality, they were just lazy-ass SOBs living off their wife's money. Nice work if you can get it. And they got it. And it was also well known around the radio station that these three guys, although they had penthouse offices at the radio station tower, they didn't actually have a job to do. But they still had a luxury office, a secretary, flat-screen TV, and the key to the executive washroom. And each of them had a not-so-secret mistress or two that would show up once in a while dressed to kill. And how did that news get out around the radio station? Well, secretaries do talk now, don't they? And Latin guys, no matter how rich or poor, do have their mistresses. And that's a fact of life. So all you expat wannabe females up there in the first world who are thinking of coming down to find your own Antonio Banderas, and you know about that Latin propensity to have mistresses, but you're thinking that the more educated a Latin guy is, the more faithful and rational he might be. Well, you're wrong. The Latin gene for men having multiple mistresses exists in every level of society, from the richest to the poorest. And it's the wealthier Latins that hide it the best because they can sequester their mistresses in luxury private apartments, whereas the poorer Latin guy has to hook up with his mistress at the cantina. So what about the daughters of wealthy Orientals and Arabes down here in Latin America, the girls that stand to inherit a lot from their parents? What about these girls who end up hooking up with Latin guys? And by the way, these are about the only Arabs and Chinese that actually do end up marrying Latin guys. These girls from wealthy families. Well, I can tell you this. Every Oriental and Latin girl in that position, married to a Latin guy, eventually has to realize that her Latin husband is having an affair. But this is not the first world, where when that's the case and women find their husbands are having affairs, they just file for divorce and the court awards them half of everything. Down here in Latin America, things just don't work like that. Not normally, but you see, when a girl from a rich or a wealthy family marries a Latin guy below her family's economic standards, she can still survive quite nicely if she divorces the guy. After all, it's her side of the family that has the money, not his. But this is Latin America, where affairs and mistresses are such a common thing that women, more often than not, don't exactly accept it, but they give the guy a second, a third, even a fourth chance sometimes before they finally throw in the towel or throw him out. Because like I think I said in one of my past shows a long, long time ago, Latin men are very good liars and very good criers. Unlike all the first world guys I know, who can't even remember the last time they cried. And as expat Eddie says, there are only three good reasons for a first world guy to turn on the tears. First world straight guys, that is. If you're gay, well, all bets are off. One, if someone very close to you dies, like your mom or your dad. Two, if you're passing a kidney stone. And three, if you get kicked or punched squarely in the balls. And of course, some guys will cry if you take away their internet. And you know, on those first three points, most first world people will agree completely with expat Eddie. However, down here in Latin America, these Latin guys learn from a very young age how to turn on the crocodile tears at will. And since most of them are so dishonest to their women, and often get caught red-handed making explicit advances, frequently towards their wife or girlfriend's best friend, relative, or sister, and you wouldn't believe how much of that goes on. Well, as you might imagine, one of the only ways out of something like that when you've been caught red-handed is to pour on the tears. Because many women, especially Latin American women, fall for that trick. Or at least they soften up a bit. And I've been told this little tale from many of my own Latin American friends. Who to a man has been caught by his girlfriend or wife screwing around. And who to a man has poured on those crocodile tears when all else fails. I'm telling you, these Latin guys could win Oscars for the way they can pour it on when they get caught. And as for the Latin women, what other choice do they have? These Latin guys are pretty much their only dating and mating pool, which I'm sure you've figured out is part of the gringo advantage for us. But more about that later. I mean, some of these Latin guys are absolutely unbelievable liars when it comes to love and romance, of course. Now listen to this. The other day I was talking to expat Eddie and he told me this story. He said, a week ago or so, he drove his girlfriend to a modeling agency for a casting. They were casting for about 5 models for a Colgate toothpaste commercial. So Eddie dropped his girlfriend off in front of the modeling agency and parked his car about a half a block away, waiting for her to fill out the forms and get the pictures taken and all that. He figured it'd be about a half an hour, 45 minutes. So he parked about a half a block away, facing the door of the modeling agency, and from where he was parked, he could see all the girls walking up to the door, pressing the buzzer and being let in, the same girls that were going for the casting for that Colgate toothpaste spot. And by the way, down here, they don't say Colgate, they say Colgate. Anyway, some of the other girls that were walking in were being dropped off by their boyfriends in various kinds of cars, some junky and some kind of nice. And as you can imagine, some of these girls were very hot models, so their boyfriends were wealthier upscale guys with nice cars like BMWs. Good-looking girls have a way of attracting guys with nice cars, money, and position. That's a no-brainer, right? Anyway, so parked along the street in front of this modeling agency were guys in their nice cars letting their girlfriends out. And a few of the guys stuck around in their cars like Eddie waiting for their girlfriends, and the rest of them just dropped the girls and left. Before Eddie's girlfriend got out of his car, they both saw a guy with a red BMW pull up at the door, dropping off his very beautiful girlfriend for her chance at that casting. So anyway, after that girl hit the buzzer, the door opened and she went into the modeling agency, Eddie's girlfriend got out of the car and started walking towards that door, which was about a half a block away because Eddie was parked a ways down the street. Anyway, Eddie noticed that she walked over to the car, the red BMW, and said something to the guy through the window. Then she went over to the modeling agency door, hit the buzzer, and they let her in. Now, after about a half hour passed, Eddie decided he wasn't going to stick around. He had some things to do. And as he left, he passed right by that red BMW with the guy in it who was still parked on the street near the modeling agency, obviously waiting for his girlfriend to come out. And about a half an hour later, Eddie got a phone call from his girlfriend saying she didn't know how long she was going to be there. They were still waiting for the photographer to show up, and it could still be an hour or two. So Eddie advised her to just take a taxi home. And about 3 hours later, when she arrived back at Eddie's house, she had a story to tell that just might never happen in the first world, but of course it happens all the time down here in Latin America. And it went like this. When she got out of the car, the guy in the BMW called her over to his window. He told her how beautiful she looked and that he wanted her phone number so they can go out on a date. And she said, yeah, right, you're trying to pick me up when you're here with your own girlfriend. And she insulted him a bit and called him a mujeriego, which basically means woman chaser or two-timer in Spanish. So anyway, Eddie's girlfriend, when she got into the modeling agency, went up to this guy's girlfriend and said, you know what? Your boyfriend's a two-timer. He just put the make on me and asked me for my phone number and for a date. And I told him to stick it. And a girl got up, walked outside, and confronted her boyfriend. And guess what her boyfriend said? Typical Latin American comeback, and she bought it. Here's what he said. He said that girl, Eddie's girlfriend, walked up to her car, told him that she wanted a date with him and asked him for his phone number, which of course never happens except in the movies. Girls don't walk up to complete strangers and ask for a phone number, unless maybe he's Brad Pitt. And this guy was closer to Jack Black than Brad Pitt. But this girl bought it. Her boyfriend was completely innocent and Eddie's girlfriend was pursuing him. Yeah, right. And he swore on his mother's grave that she was trying to pick him up. And Eddie's girlfriend said he was very nearly in tears. And guess what? When the casting was over and all the girls walked out, the guy who was sitting there in his BMW got out of his car, called Eddie's girlfriend a bitch in front of his girlfriend to drive home the point, got back in his car, slammed it in first and hit the gas and squealed away in a patch of rubber, which was a real adult thing to do, don't you think? But his girlfriend bought it. Now imagine a guy like that flirting right under the nose of his girlfriend and how many times a day he gets away with that very same thing. But that's Latin America, especially in the wealthier classes. The ones that have nice cars and a little money pull that stuff all the time. But that wasn't the end of that day's sexual harassment for Eddie's girlfriend. Get this. She had to walk two blocks to a busier street to get a taxi. And when she finally did get the cab driver, before he took off, said, "Listen, lady, you see that car behind us? I think they're following you." And she looked back, and it wasn't the guy with the red BMW, but a dark late-model Range Rover with blacked-out windows. But that wasn't the only car that was following closely behind. Behind that one was another identical Range Rover. And they were following that taxi very closely, in fact, tailgating him. And the taxi driver said to her, "Well, at least they're not narcos because they've got government plates." And they did. They had government license plates. And Eddie's girlfriend said she had no idea who these people were. She just figured the usual. They were a bunch of government jerks tailgating because they're in a hurry. Anyway, after about a 15-minute ride, the taxi got to Eddie's subdivision. And it's a guarded subdivision, so you have to register with the guard before he'll open the gate. So the taxi pulled up to the guard station, and the two Range Rovers pulled up right behind, and a guy jumped out of one of those Range Rovers. It turns out he was a well-dressed bodyguard in charge of that little VIP caravan. And he walked up to the taxi, knocked on the window, handed Eddie's girlfriend a business card, and he said, "My boss thinks you're very beautiful and he'd like to meet you." And she looked at the business card, and the guy they were chauffeuring around was a well-known government cabinet minister who naturally had a wife, a family, and kids. They all do. But he wanted a date with Eddie's girlfriend. And he was going around picking up beautiful women the usual way Latin guys with power and money and nice cars do. They have their bodyguards do it. And many times the beautiful girl obliges. Because for so many of them, it's much better to be the mistress of a wealthy, powerful, macho jerk like that than to have to ride the bus each day and fend off the throngs of common everyday wolves that she's sure to encounter there. And believe me, these wealthy guys and government jerks play that game to the fullest. So anyway, at that point, Eddie's girlfriend said to the bodyguard, "I don't take business cards from people I don't know. I don't like to talk to strange men." And then the bodyguard pointed out, "Well, my boss is no strange guy. He's a VIP in government, blah, blah, blah." And then Eddie's girlfriend smiled and said to the guy, "Okay, look, I'll tell you what. You write the phone number of his wife down in the back of this business card, and I'll call her and ask her if it's okay with her if I have a date with her husband. You tell that to your boss." Then she rolled up the window and the taxi driver dropped her off at Eddie's house. But you see, that's a typical macho move that you see down here in Latin America all the time. These macho guys are just dogs, and a lot of girls fall for it, especially very beautiful ones stuck in bad neighborhoods, ones that are from the lower socioeconomic classes. They've got beauty, and the guy's got money and power. Talk about Beauty and the Beast. Seems like down here, every Latin guy with a decent car and a few bucks has taken a page or two out of Bill Clinton's diary.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.